Well, good morning. We'll go ahead and get our meeting started. If you'd like to have a seat, we would like to welcome you out to the Mesa City Council meeting. This is a study session. We look forward to getting a lot of good things accomplished this morning. We'd like to excuse our good mayor, who is out of town, and we believe Mr. Richens will be joining us shortly. The first item on the agenda is to review our agenda for March 4th, the regular council meeting. And as everybody catches up, I know we want to make sure the computers are up and running. On the first page, item 2 through 3C.
Some of this just
sat
down.
Sorry. Thank you. Let you catch up.
The last questionnaire would have done that.
Yes. That's fine. Sure. Let me know when you're ready. That's good.
Who said that?
Get some, like, singer tap
dance. Yeah, tap dance is me. We're just waiting for the iPads to get all the information downloaded. It is nice having this hard copy. It goes quickly. Definitely. Okay. So, item 2 through 3C. Any questions there? Items 4A and 4B. Items 4C through 4E. Items 4F through 5E.
I'm good to eat another word.
Yes, sir. Mr. Richens.
This is Dennis's district, but it affects all of us. Right now, we have University under construction. We have Main Street under construction between Alma School and Dobson. We have University under construction between Alma and Dobson. And we're about to take Southern under construction between Alma and Dobson. So, could we make sure at least one of those is complete before this one starts getting torn down? This is an important project, and I support it, and I want it to go forward, but I'm starting to hear about it. So,
yeah,
you know,
I understand.
What's the ETA? I know Main Street's going to be a while, so Main Street, and University doesn't look anywhere close to completion, so what's our kind of...
Main Street is light rail, and that will be a while, and starting in May, then they'll be working in the downtown moratorium lifts, and they'll also be working in the downtown area for the summer, because that's their primary months of construction. Dobson and University is the work you see up there. It's the intersection work and some utilities work. We were to start paving today, but there was a water line break yesterday. That project is scheduled to be complete this summer, June, July time frame right now.
Yeah, and it's not just Dobson and University. I mean,
it goes all the way to
Alma School. It goes all the way to Alma School.
Yes, utility work goes all the way to Alma School and down Alma. Yes, I understand. So that work will be completing this summer. There is a difference in Southern Avenue in that we're going to narrow the street. You know, it's a roadway diet. We're going from 6 lanes to 4 lanes. Much of the work we need to start initially is the undergrounding overhead on the overhead lines on the north side of the street, which you know, we should be able to do behind the curb and kind of start to narrow the street. You know, demolish the curbing and kind of keep things over. There will be barricading, but since we're already going to bring that street down to 4 lanes, I don't see it as impactful as Dobson and University or Main Street right now.
You don't think that a restriction will be beyond 2 lanes each direction?
I can't promise you anything. There will be restrictions.
I tried.
We don't see SRP really getting started in there right now till probably April or shortly after, so they'll be probably coming up to speed. We want them to work in the summer because we don't want them impacting the Christmas season at the mall.
No, I agree.
So, you know, so we're kind of pushing a lot of things into this summer because of we're trying to keep those winter months when we have a lot of visitors in town, a lot of different people here, open, and the shopping season's clear. So we're kind of running up against a bit of a barricade ourselves. So.
Okay, so the University drive will be about, when's the estimated completion?
This summer, July.
July, okay.
All right. Thank you. Any other items? 5A, yes.
No, can we go backwards? Because my iPad actually turned off and had to reboot.
Thank
I actually
you.
Have a question on 4A. And it appears like we're doing something different with the purchasing of the equipment for the fire department. Big, huge spreadsheets, percentage off, different things. I just wondered if anyone wants to explain what the new thinking is, how that helps you hopefully reduce whatever time purchasing stuff is my guess.
Well, if you take the spreadsheet side, and I'll talk about the equipment side.
Go ahead first.
Vice Mayor and Councilmember Higgins, I can talk about the equipment side of it and what we're doing, and from the purchasing side, we'll let purchasing take care of that. On the equipment side, the equipment where we're looking at replacing most of it is anywhere from 15 to 20 years old. When we get a new vehicle in, the nice thing was that out at our shop right now, they review all of the equipment. Years past, they just replace it all when a vehicle came in. Now they take that old vehicle that we're going to sell or donate or do something with, and they look at all the equipment. The equipment that can be used, they repaint it, refurbish it, put it back on the new truck. It's a small percentage of that can be put back on because it's quite old, but they look at all of it. The other stuff that can't be used either goes to the warehouse for sale, or if it's not usable and it can be scrapped, such as metal and things like that, it goes into the recycle for the city. So it's all used in some capacity. So from the warehouse, from the maintenance side, that's how we treat all the equipment and how all of it's looked at. And this is just that contract we have to replace that equipment.
Yes.
Good morning.
Councilmember Summers.
Sorry. We didn't get to the question yet. So, but go ahead.
So to explain the spreadsheet approach, we took the history of purchases that the fire department's made over the last few years, separated them by manufacturer category, and sought the highest discount off manufacturer list price that we could get awarded to. We're awarding to the three primary vendors where the amount was being spent over $25,000 per year with that particular manufacturer. And then as a not really supplemental to the award of $200,000, but just as explanation in the memo, the other non-awarded items are giving us the opportunity, the fire department, the opportunity to purchase directly from the vendor on this list that gives them the highest percentage discount.
And how did what did we used to do? It was different. It was a bigger contract and everything was underneath it, or?
This was an effort, the first, to consolidate and aggregate the spend that's been historical but hasn't been contracted or solicited in the past. It's just been purchased as needed.
So this is going to save?
This should save us
money.
Yeah,
yep. You're accumulating or conglomerating all the purchases that happened during the year.
And we've identified the opportunity for the best discount.
So do you see this in other departments coming up too?
It certainly is something we will look at as these type of opportunities come up.
What they can do now is go in and look at purchases over a period of time of department. Sometimes departments purchasing things as they were happening over the year, and then I think purchasing kind of stepped back and said, wait a minute, maybe there's a pattern here that we can go out and do it all and maybe get a discount from manufacturers or buying it in a bulk. And it's just trying to get that long-term perspective of what you really need over a year's period of time. So I think that's what they're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Summers.
Chief, you had mentioned that that some of the material ends up in scrap. Have you been tracking how much of that material ends up in scrap and recycled, I think is what you said?
It does get recycled. I don't have that number for you. I can find out.
I'm just curious, are they considering that in this price, or are we selling that material for scrap, and if so, how much?
That would be handled as a separate transaction. It wouldn't be acknowledged.
It wouldn't be part of this price.
It is not.
Are we receiving the benefit for recycling it, or is this company?
No, we are.
We are.
We are.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we can. So some of this might come back to us as the materials or the equipment's deemed to be unusable and unrepairable. We recycle it for metal, and we can.
Absolutely, and that's what we do now. I'm not sure how long we've been doing that, but everything that's usable. In some fashion, if we can't use it for frontline stuff, we'll get sold through the city's auction, so the city gets money back through there. The things that can't be sold through the auction is stripped down and recycled as either plastic or metal or anything like that, which, again, the city gets reimbursed for that through that program.
It's a good enterprise. So we're selling it for
whenever we can,
or we're selling it for scrap.
Yes.
Excellent. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you very much. Okay, getting back to, looks like 5A through 5E.
Is 5D what we're going to report on later?
Yes. Wonderful. Yes,
okay, Councilmember Higgins. Item 5C, I thought we might have had a presentation on the dial-a-ride issue and how we're changing things. Is there anything that someone wants to talk about? Because, I mean, you talk about savings and the numbers from last year, and I just thought maybe you had a little update for us.
Thank you. Yes, Vice Mayor, Councilwoman Higgins. In July, we changed our service delivery method for Dial-A-Ride. We went from a shared ride van service to a brokerage taxicab-based service. That change has significantly reduced our capital investment that we need in the program. So our Dial-A-Ride costs have seen a substantial decline. We're pretty much, after 6 months, we're pretty much right on our budget estimate. Our ridership has increased on Dial-A-Ride, and our or the usage, the number of trips have increased. Our cost per trip has fallen from about $35 per trip to $25 per trip. So we've seen a significant savings in that.
Great. Awesome. Thank you.
Great. Mr. Summers.
I brought this up at the RPTA meeting, and I'll say it again here. One of the concerns I'm having about the program is it's working well to reduce our cost per trip. But we have also made a concerted effort at RPTA to try to shift people as best we can from using the Dial-A-Ride services to using the regular transportation services. We provide bus passes, we provide light rail passes, we provide, we have a training center set up with simulators where people can learn how to ingress and egress off of the various transit options. What's concerning me right now is that we have seen an increase in the users. And I've asked RPTA to look at it, and I would ask our local staff to look at why it is that we're seeing more people using the Dial-A-Ride service. And my guess is it's because it's so convenient. You can now just call a taxi cab and get anywhere you need to be rather than having to go through the transit service. So I have some concerns that we have an unintended consequence by using the cab service and reducing our per-person trip. We're encouraging people to use it rather than shifting them to the regular transit service, and that volume is going to outweigh the individual reduction. So I'd like just to continue to look at transit service and how we can ensure that people can use the regular transit service if they are indeed able to do that.
We are doing that as part of when in a person wanting to be ADA certified goes into the mobility center, they are given an option of getting a platinum pass, which is the bus pass for employers, basically, that allows them to take bus or rail as an option. And we are seeing a significant use in that. We had one rider, just as an example, in October, he was in a wheelchair, and he, rather than taking a Dial-A-Ride trip, he took about 30 platinum pass trips. So that's 30 trips at 85 cents a trip versus 30 trips at $25 a trip.
Exactly. And that's what we want to see in the system, and it's extremely important to those, because there are people who cannot use the regular transit service for one reason or another. They're just physically not capable of doing so. And when you have a lot of people start flooding the system that perhaps could do what this gentleman is doing and using his regular passes, they're using up our capacity, and they're damaging our capacity to provide the service to those who really need it. So we want people to get where they're going, but we want to make sure that that system is available to those who really need it. So that's why it's so important that we keep an eye on this. And I would even suggest that we consider whether or not maybe our city auditor might be able to help take a look at this program and work with RPTA on taking a look and seeing what's happening here. Give us a picture if that's appropriate.
Yeah, good suggestion. It's great to hear the savings coming in. All these years we've heard about these costs, and nice to hear that they're coming down, but you know, share the concern. So thank you. So 5... D and E, any questions there? And then 6A through 7B. And if nothing there, then items not on the consent would be 8, in 8A, or excuse me, 8A, which is conduct a public hearing, minor general plan amendment. So, okay, and then looks like 8B through 8E, zoning cases, anything there, Mr. Wesley? No? Okay, good. All right. Looks like it's all there. Next item on the agenda is to hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on the facilities use agreement with the Athletics Investment Group, LLC, for spring training to be held at the Hohokam Stadium and Fitch Park practice facilities.
Mr. Vice Mayor.
Yes, sir.
Just want to just kind of introduce this topic. We brought to council
December.
December, end of December.
December 20th.
The MOU for the Oakland A's, the city would enter into an agreement with the Oakland A's. The MOU outlined the business points. We have been successful in negotiating a facilities use agreement, a long-term agreement with the Oakland A's, which we're very happy to bring with you the details today. We appreciate the work of the city staff. Scott Rigby, for sure, and his and assisted by Mark Hirschberg. Also want to thank the Oakland A's. They have been a very good partner to work with in coming up with these deal points that we're here to present to you. I know that one of the questions that has been coming up since we've announced the opportunity that we have to work with the Oakland A's to bring them into the facilities at Hohokam and Fitch is the question about the funding. And I think we mentioned to council in an update that we had appeared before the Cactus League subcommittee of the Arizona Sports and Tourism Authority back this past January, and were able to receive a unanimous support for the funding for the city for Hohokam and Fitch. And then Tuesday this week, sorry, all runs together. Tuesday of this week, we went before the full board of the Arizona Sports and Tourism Authority, and they unanimously agreed or supported the city of Mesa receiving $8.2 million of regional funds for the improvements to Hohokam and Fitch. So we're very pleased to share that with you today. It's an important part of our funding for these improvements. Effectively, what they actually announced was that they authorized their staff to enter into an agreement with us for those terms. So we'll obviously have to finish that up. But I think the conditions that they asked for or put on that agreement had everything to do with what we expected, that we needed to have a long-term agreement with the Oakland A's, which we do in this proposed agreement. We meet the term that they're looking for. One of the things that's important to understand is the way the ASTA funding works is that it is was set up to fund several different facilities, spring training facilities across the valley. There is a priority of facilities of when they get their funding. And so we will have to wait until those facilities ahead of us receive their funding. This is not a change from the original plan. It's always been this way. The only thing that's changed since the original, I guess, establishment of this funding was that obviously, during the last 3 or 4 years, the amount of funds, revenues coming into ASTA to pay off those other cities obviously is reduced significantly, so it's delayed all of the cities' timing of when they're getting the funds. We're not going to be an exception, but we're retaining our position of priority, so we know that when those other facilities and cities receive their reimbursement, as soon as their obligations are met, then it will flow to us. Mike Galloway, who's the Mesa representative on the board, told me that they've actually started to see some improvements. He sits on their finance committee. He said they've seen some improvements in the amount of revenues that are coming in. So he thinks that we'll still be in pretty good shape as far as when we'll receive those dollars. So that'll be part of when we do the financing. We'll understand that the $8.2 million will come a little bit later in the term. It won't be available day one, but it'll be calculated as part of our financing. But the good news is we've been approved for it, and we'll be receiving that in the future.
Yes, Mr. Summers.
Chris, there on those dollars, what degree of certainty do we have that we are going to actually receive them? There have been other communities that have counted on those dollars only to find out that they're not going to get them.
Well, all of the cities and the facilities that were scheduled to receive the funds in the original program have always been identified that those obligations were going to be met. And there's I think the ASDA funding sunsets like in 2030, maybe 32, 33, something like that. And under all the calculations, even when they made the adjustments for the downturn in the economy, we were going to receive the funds. It was just going to be later than we had originally expected. So there really wasn't any question either from ASDA or anyone that I knew of that we were ever going to receive it. It was just a matter of timing. Other communities that – oh, go ahead.
Well, how do those funds come to us? I mean, we get an $8 million check one day?
So what will happen is once they've met the obligations of the other facilities of the other cities, Tempe, Scottsdale, Peoria, Surprise. Is that
we're
it?
We're next after that.
Yeah, and then we're next out. And then we're in the same year as Phoenix for Maryville, yep. I think. I think that's right. So those funds get collected by the county, and they go to ASDA, and there's a whole formula where those dollars fall out. And they pay back each one of those cities at a set amount. There was an agreed upon amount for each of those cities to be reimbursed. And then when all those obligations are met, then ASDA, as they've received those funds from the car rental tax, and I think there's some bed tax in there also, then we'll receive our portion once they've met all those reimbursed all those other cities for their obligations. But everything since, even when the time when it was, things were very difficult, we've always been on the schedule, their estimates that we would receive our funding. There are two cities that entered into agreements with ASTA that were not in the original formula because at the time, you know, things were going so well, there was an expectation there was going to be, I don't know, excess, but they were going to collect more dollars than the obligations they had. I think what those cities have been told is that right now there's not an expectation that there'll be any funds that will be able to flow to them. And what the problem is the sunset. Because of the sunset provision the collection of the taxes from the car rental and the bed tax expires, the thought was that before they could ever pay those cities out, they would have to, in order to meet all their current obligations, they would run out of time before those other cities could receive the funds that they were expecting.
So we could be looking as late as 2030 for our reimbursement?
No. I think we heard they gave us a conservative number of like 2021. We think it'll probably be a little sooner than that because that was the worst case scenario and improvements. And we've heard that some cities are actually going to be accelerated now in their reimbursements with this improved economy. So, you know, if we're somewhere between 2016 and 2020, that fits right in with the expectation we've had all along.
And we intend to sell bonds for this?
We will sell bonds initially for all these facilities and then reimburse those eventually. And then that'll get calculated into our cash flows.
Yes. And if we repay the bonds earlier than that, we would just put this in the Economic Development Fund or the $8 million?
What we'll do, yes. So we're getting... so.
Or is that in here?
No. So just quickly, the concept is that the spring training facilities, both with the Cubs and the Oakland A's, will ultimately, the end of the day, we will be able to the funds for to cover those costs will come from the land sales of Pinal County.
Right.
Okay. So let's just. But that's while that's continuing, and we're seeing that due diligence effort continuing, those funds aren't going to be available in order to pay the bills to make the improvements. Okay. So in order, what we will need to do is go issue bonds, okay? And we will go do excise tax bonds that while they're pledged by all the excise taxes that the city collects, are what the way we're going to pay for them is, you just mentioned it, out of the Economic Development Fund, where we've allocated $4.5 million a year to help pay for the bond, the debt service on the bonds, okay, that will have to be issued. When, and we've worked with our financial advisors so that we anticipate that there will be, that we'll hopefully get the cash from land sales or ASTA. And as those come in, we're looking to having early call dates where we can call the bonds back, and so we won't have to leave them out there collecting interest. So we're working with him on the strategy of finance of how, when those call dates will be. We have to be careful not to do them too soon or too often, because then that affects the pricing of the bond. So there's, but we want to have the flexibility that if we have cash, receive cash in the near future, we can pay back the bonds and not have to continue to pay the interest costs. So we've got that in our plans to put that in place. And to your point, then, as either the cash is received from Pinal County or ASTA, then we will use that to repay back the Economic Development Fund. So then we can come back to the council and we can look at other priorities to, you know, within the Economic Development Fund that we might want to fund in the future. Does that help?
Clear as fog.
I'm sorry. we're trying to, the idea is ultimately it'll be paid by the land proceeds, but until then we've got to come up with kind of this interim plan until we get there. And certainly the ASTA funds will help, the land sales will help. Remember, we have 2 cents out of the, or 2% out of the bed tax that's being dedicated towards the spring training facilities. Mm-hmm. We have lease payments that are coming from the Cubs for their facilities that will help pay for this. I'm missing something. Is that?
Well, we'll cover in here. We'll have a great opportunity to create our own revenue out at Hohokam and Fitch.
But those are the sort. So we feel very comfortable. We're not relying upon some expected economic development activity to pay for these bonds. Mm-hmm. Okay, and I know that's been a concern in other areas. We're not. Very comfortable that even in the Economic Development Fund, that with our current projections, and you'll see those again, we gave those to you last year, you'll see them again, because of the refinancing of bonds, we were able to realize a significant savings. And so at least for the next 10 years, that's as far as we've done our forecast, we've set aside the $4.5 million a year in payments. So we feel very comfortable that we'll be able to make the payments on the debt service until such time that we're able to sell enough of the land to pay it back.
So just to summarize, we're going to sell bonds to finance this. Those payments come out of an economic development fund that we have that has cash in it.
Yes.
And then as we pay that out, as we sell our Pinal County lands and ASTA pays the money, that money gets put into the pot, pays off the bonds, and reinvests in economic development.
Reimburses economic development fund. You should have said it the first time. That was much better.
Perfect. Thank you.
Well, good. Thank you for that overview.
Now, I'm sorry. It probably stole all his thunder, but this is important.
Actually, so. That was a great overview, and what I think I've heard is there was a tremendous amount of good work behind the scenes to get that accomplished with the ASTA and every, you know, all that went on. So thank you for that.
Yep.
We appreciate the staff and everybody doing that. Yes, Mr. Rigby.
Vice Mayor, members of the council, we're excited to be back. We recommend approval. No, I'm just kidding. as you know, we've been talking with Oakland Athletics. They currently are operating out of Phoenix Muni, and Papago doing their spring training operations. Let me first back up. Mark Hirschberg from the Parks and Recs Community Facilities has been working heavily on this, as well as Ted Pelk.
Wow.
I'm sorry.
Wow.
Slaughtered. I need a reboot Ted here. P. Ted P. With the Oakland A's, apparently Lou Wolf, the owner, is deciding to take batting practice this morning out of his facility, so I can't blame him for doing that. It's beautiful weather.
It's for TV.
Oh. But you'll have an opportunity to meet him later today at the luncheon, so he looks forward to seeing that. But they currently operate out at Phoenix Muni. They have that contract through the end of December of next year, 14. They will fulfill that contract. But as they went through that exercise and started to look at what their future was, working with Phoenix identified some additional needs they needed in their city. And so they mutually agreed that Oakland needed to consider other opportunities. They approached us probably the summer of last year about the opportunity, understanding that the Cubs will be ending their spring training operations at Hohokam and Fitch at the end of this year. We're moving into the new facility down at Riverview and thought a great opportunity to backfill at our operations over at Hohokam and Fitch. So we began that discussion, and as Chris said, in December 20th of last year, we came forward with an MOU that was kind of the precursor to this. We're happy to report that we reached consensus on the facilities use agreement, and we'll take a couple minutes to run through those. Some of these may seem very similar to what we did in December, and that's exactly right. Not a lot changed, if any major points changed from what we did back in the MOU. So just to summarize, they did win the AL West last year, so we're excited to have them in town coming back to Mesa. I think they were here in Mesa before my time, long time before my time, but they're coming back to Mesa as the mayor talks. They're talking about Hohokam and Fitch. Here's two aerials of those facilities. You obviously have the stadium at Hohokam with a full practice field and half field behind them with batting cages. And then at Fitch, you have the full complex with batting cages, agility fields, and team clubhouse. These are good facilities, but they do need some improvements in order to accommodate what nowadays most Major League Baseball teams are focusing on is better nutrition efforts, better, they even do language training. It's just a challenge at our current facilities to do some of those operations. So let me just quickly run through the agreement. As Chris said, we estimate, based on with the Oakland A's, it's to do the improvements at Hohokam and Fitch, it's about a $20 million kind of overall budget. What we agreed to is up to the first $15 million. The city takes that full responsibility up to that first $15 million. For the next, if there's any dollar for dollar above that $15 million, we share that 50-50 with the Cubs between the $15 and $20 million next tranche of dollars. Anything over that $20 million is solely borne by the Oakland A's. As Chris just spoke about, on Tuesday received authorization from the STA for the $8.2 million that will go toward these improvements of Hohokam and Fitch. It was conditioned on a long-term agreement. We have reached agreement on a 20-year agreement with 2 5-year options. So we look forward to having the A's here for a long time. Obviously, as complexes age and move forward in their history, there will need to be periodic improvements. We agree at the years 10 and 20 marks that after a consultation with the A's, if there are needed improvements at those period of times, that the City of Mesa will take on that responsibility. Each party annually contribute $25,000 for a capital improvement fund to be used on improvements. And during interim improvements, so let's say it's year 7 and we see there's something that really needs to be tackled, that those interim improvements will be done at a 50-50 split between the A's and the Cubs. Just on... Just on operations, the A's will have exclusive use of Hohokam Stadium during spring training and the use of Fitch Park throughout the term. We retain the use of any part of the complex during the non-exclusive times, so long as there's no concurrent usage. And then the two parties will agree to work on a master calendar to figure out when the A's need it, when the city uses it. The A's will retain all revenue generated at the stadium. And we'll talk a little about what that means. The City of Mesa actually is helpful for us as far as we contain our expenditures and costs that we currently go through as we operate out there today with the Cubs. Mesa retains all revenues that we derive from our events. And this is an important point for us, and Mark can maybe talk about this now or a little bit later, is the A's are very amenable to working with us as far as creating better flexibility for us to use our own facilities. Obviously, during spring training, they need those facilities to do their player training and during games time. But outside of that, they understand these are community facilities and that the community needs an opportunity to use these. And so we're excited, Mark's excited to be able to program those fields and the stadium and other activities at a greater frequency than we currently have today. Repairs at the entire complex, the A's provide and fund all field maintenance for areas inside the fence. Today, for example, for Cubs, we do all field maintenance. We do everything for them. This is a change. Ted's group will take care of literally inside the fence. They do all field maintenance. They'll prep the fields. They'll take care of their own pitching mounds and those type of things. We retain the soccer fields, if you think out at Hohokam. All those soccer fields were on game day. It's game day parking, but outside of that, we'll continue to maintain that because that's where Mark gets to program that for soccer activities and other activities. Mesa will continue to provide for all maintenance repairs throughout the complex. At Hohokam, we'll split 50-50 the janitorial service at the stadium during spring training. Currently, we cover that 100% with the Cubs. A's will provide and pay for their janitorial service for their home team clubhouse and office space during spring training. And then for Mesa, we'll provide and pay for all utilities except that the A's pay for their own telephone and internet during spring training. At Fitch, the A's will provide and pay for their own telephone internet costs within the main clubhouse building. They'll pay for their own janitorial services for the main clubhouse building. We'll pay up to the first $100,000, if it reaches up to $100,000, for those individually metered utilities, water, electric, gas for the main clubhouse. And the A's will pay all costs above that. We'll pay for the cost of utilities and janitorial service outside of the main clubhouse walls, field lighting, water. One of the things when we looked at this, the question was, what's the benefit to Mesa, not just on having them backfill the facility, but how do we look at our costs? And the council came up and suggested to staff to look at three different alternatives, and we'll quickly review this. Is one alternative is we're fortunate to have the A sitting here today talking with us to backfill. One of the scenarios was what happens if we had not had the A's come forward, but yet we had the desire to continue to go out and recruit another team, whether from the Grapefruit League, about coming out here to play in Arizona at our facility. The reality is, in order to do that, we'd continue to maintain those facilities at a high level in order to be able to attract that, meaning take care of those fields at their quality level. So when we were able to bring those teams in to look at the facility to look good, we need to continue to maintain the stadium in a workable manner. So that's similar to what we operate to out there today. If there's a cost, we figure for that. The scenario B would be, what happens if we turn Hohokam and Fitch into almost like a Quail Run or Red Mountain operation? What would be the cost to continue to run that on an annual basis? And the third option was obviously, is if the A's were to come in, what would be the cost associated to that? What we came up with is to currently run the facility today, and hoping for a team to come forward in the year or two or 3 years after the Cubs were to leave, to continue to run that operation at the level that would be commensurate with an MLB quality facility, it's about $2.3 million. The next scenario would be is if we were to run it for Quail Run Park or Red Mountain, keep the fields nice, but maybe not to the same MLB quality, to keep the stadium looking good, but probably not at that tip-top shape, but we could do some different operations in that. It's about $1.5 million annually. With the deal, we've been able to work with the A's and their willingness to take on that field maintenance and those janitorial costs and other operational costs. We believe that cost would now drop to about $750,000 or $775,000 a year. So in essence, with the A's coming and joining and partnering with us in these two facilities, we would see on the magnitude of about $1.5 million cost savings a year. So for all intents and purposes, we have a facility backfilled with an MLB team that are going to bring fans, basically net new fans, to Arizona and to, not to Arizona, but to Mesa and use our restaurants and hotels and other activities. We get a facility that we get to better operate at a tip-top shape, whether it be for community programs or if we get the WAC tournament, those things that Mark can program into that. At the end of the day, though, we actually reducing our costs by bringing in another MLB team. So we think it's a win-win operation.
Music to my ears, at least. That's wonderful.
Great.
Yes, Mr. Summers.
What does it cost today with the Cubs in it?
Vice Mayor, Councilmember Summers, that would be that $2.3
million. $2.3 today?
But yeah. You net out some of that.
Yeah, some of that nets out with after revenue splits and stuff like that, but direct operating costs is $2.3.
Yeah. All right, I had it in my head as a little higher than that.
No, that's about right. And then, Mark says, then we receive some revenues that we share with either Hohokams or the Cubs, okay. And that kind of helps offset some of that cost. But that I think that's a pretty consistent number, 2.3. Well, now, That's his operating cost. What you're probably, to your point, it costs us more than that because oftentimes annually we're doing batting cages or seat replacements or things like that. And so if you add in that capital cost over an average period, it's probably, I don't know, it's at least $200,000, $300,000 more a year probably for that. Is that accurate?
Correct.
So,
yeah. So, Vice Mayor, just real quick, next steps. If we receive direction to move forward, and this will be on the agenda for Monday night for possible action, is we'll continue to move forward with our process for selecting our design consultant. We went through interviews yesterday, so we have a short list. And we're working towards solidifying that, and then we're out on the street. I think today, actually, we receive submittals for the CMAR, Construction Manager at Risk, for this project. Obviously, those are contingent on approval Monday evening. If that is approved Monday, if the agreement is approved Monday evening, we'd continue to move forward with those. As again, Chris said, we'll be coming back to you with the intergovernmental agreement with the STA for that funding agreement. What I'd like to do is turn some time over to Ted and just kind of have him say hi and welcome, but also talk about
Hey, very good.
Okay. See, I
get Mesa resident.
And Mesa resident.
But also what they envision their use of the facility. Obviously, they're a different type of team than the Cubs. They don't.
That first slide. That first slide tells us that.
You went there. I did not.
Pressure's on, huh?
Strike from the record. Strike from the record. Too late. He
has I'm just going to leave it at that.
First up, Vice Mayor, Council, thank you. First off, from Lou Wolf and our entire organization, we're looking forward to coming to Mesa. As a Mesa resident for, I guess, almost 30 years now, it's nice to come home. It's making my commute a whole lot shorter. So 3 miles versus 16 one way is a nice commute. So, but we're looking forward to it. It's been a wonderful process, a refreshing process, I think, from our organization. We're very homegrown in a lot of ways. I said this is my 31st year with the club. So it's been a wonderful ride, highs and lows of winning and losing. But we did have three trophies prior to me coming, so, and they were all on Mesa. So hopefully we can add on to our trophy case and make one a little bit bigger here as we come back home to Mesa. So, but we're looking forward to it. I think it's a wonderful opportunity for the city of Mesa, being a resident, but it's also a wonderful opportunity for us to come forward, to come to a community that's welcomed open arms to us. Obviously, we had a very outstanding agreement with Phoenix, and in a sense have a hard time leaving, but also looking forward to the future. We're going to honor our agreement with Phoenix, and we couldn't work things out, and I made a phone call to Chris and ended up in his office and on the way home, and we were able to work things out. So we're looking forward to coming. But as an organization, I think we're homegrown. We're very active in the community. We do have baseball clinics and things of whatnot that we'll work with Mark on with our minor league players throughout the year. So we kind of get active. We do have community service awards that we do, and we'll actively do that here in Mesa as well. So, but we're looking forward to all those things. So by all means, we're looking forward to Monday night, and hopefully we get approval and we can move forward.
Excellent. So, thank you. Mr. Summers.
So, Scott, under this agreement for facility improvements, who's responsible for putting in the poles for the championship banners?
I think we can fit.
No, you don't have to answer.
Well, and Ted, I hope you'll take back the message. It's sure good to have you home in Mesa. You know, all those years, a lot of us, decades ago, and you have been wonderful to work with, too. The reports back have been the A's organization, just top-notch professionals, and really coming to an agreement. And so we're looking forward to having you back. So,
thank you.
Thanks. Good. Thank you, Mr. Rigby. Okay. Looks like item 2B would be hear a presentation, discuss the demographic, economic, and quality of life indicators. This is a...
Mr. Vice Mayor, this is the presentation we ran out of time with last Thursday, so we wanted to have a chance. Staff has put a lot of time and effort in putting this together, and then they all got wiped out by sickness today.
That's all right.
We brought in the backup squad.
This is the best. Unfortunately, the terrific people who put this together either have family sick or are sick themselves this morning. So you got our pinch hitters here with Jeff.
Great.
This is Jeff Rush, who is an IT manager over our GIS area, and he's going to take you through the slides, and we have others who can answer questions as well.
Okay. Vice Mayor, Council, about a year ago, we were asked to put together some information regarding tax revenues, information and trending, and then this year we were asked to give you some more information. So I'm going to speak to a little bit about some general demographics, some economic variables, and really what I'll call our state of services. So these first couple slides, if you look at the first one here, is a population pyramid here for year 2000, and it's a age distribution breakdown. If you move on to 2010, you'll notice that if we flip back and forth a couple times here, you'll notice that for the most of this age distribution stays pretty constant, except for really around your age 50 to 70 age group is where you're seeing the increase, the more dramatic increase. The other thing you're seeing with 2010 is we've also added, or there's a breakdown here between Hispanic and non-Hispanic population as well. So another note maybe on this slide is for your under 40 and under, that's making up about 30-40% of the population.
These population pyramids are what the state demographer uses to do analysis of different cities also. So it's just kind of is that where we got these from?
We did get it from the state demographer, correct.
So.
Well, we didn't do these?
No, we just...
We have some that we did do, yes. This is the population density for 2000. So you'll see 2000 and 2010 here as well. The big factor to notice here is that the majority of the population increases is in the eastern part of the city. Probably not surprising. And then that is broken down by people per square mile over there in the legend. The next variable is median income between 2000 and 2010. And
hold
one
on
of,
just a second. Is it just,
since, no, we're both in the same thing. It hasn't been opened since it started.
It's a huge. Yeah.
It's open. Oh, okay.
We're a little bit behind. But.
We're like
okay,
eight
sorry.
Slides behind. It's open.
Yeah.
We're current.
Continue. That's
continue.
Fine. Thank you.
I have a newer version.
Yeah, well. We're fiscal responsible over here.
So. I bought it myself.
Okay. Income.
Okay, back to income. Okay.
Keep going. Hurry.
Back to median income, this is just a representation between 2000 and 2010. That one's pretty self-explanatory.
Obviously, the darker the colors, the deeper the density.
So you start seeing, again, it's just, we're trying to, the easiest way to do this is kind of get a feel is you kind of toggle between the two, and you kind of start seeing shifts and trends on income, population. It's shifting east. I'm not sure overall we did an overall number. We have to look.
You can tell that the income's gone up a little bit.
It just seems to be
overall.
More.
Yeah. More. Yeah, it's true. There's more of the darker color.
Or it's getting darker.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. Even in district, the West Mesa, where I'll turn this on so you can hear. As you flip between the two in certain areas, particularly around downtown, even though the income's low, it seems to be increasing. Not by much, but.
The next slide here is median age. So if you look at probably more of the distinguishing characteristics here is if you look down at the gateway area, keep in mind, this is not population. This is just median age. So I would suspect that this is probably attributed to more of the development that's gone on over the last 10 years that has shifted that age distribution to a younger demographic.
So probably what you had out there previously were older homesteads where you had older population, and then with the new subdivisions coming in and newer, younger families, that's probably shifted that average age is probably what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Well, I think a lot of that property down,
down there that was residential was bought out and turned into industrial.
Could be.
So those homesteads have actually left, and what's left are, and an ASU population, and folks who are living there are moving in and increasing. So that's, you have a removal of some of the residential, and what's left is student population.
These next several slides are tax revenue, very similar to what you saw last year. If we scroll through them slowly, you'll see that there's significant impact as we get down to 2010, 2011. In particular, if you look at the Fiesta Mall area, you can pretty much see it diminish entirely, or at least decrease dramatically. Superstition Springs is hit a little bit, but overall, compared to other areas, is remaining somewhat a little better off. Riverview takes an impact as we get close to 2012 as well.
It's also interesting, you can see, I won't name any names like Craig Burge, but you can see his impact at Country Club in the 60 mm-hmm. with the car dealerships there. It remains pretty constant through the whole thing. So, but you do see that shift out to the east where there's Signal Butte and 60 where you've got a lot of commercial development.
Looking at last year's numbers as well, the car dealerships have come back a little bit this last year.
Next year, I'd be interested in seeing this on a regional scale.
Oh, for like Maricopa?
Shifting regionally, including maybe even portions of Pinal County. I don't think there's a lot happening in Pinal County quite yet, but it would give us a... I apologize. What I had asked for, if in case you didn't hear, is... I'd like to see this on a regional scale, including Northern Pinal County, particularly everything, you know, Tempe, Chandler, East, South Scottsdale, probably. And that would give us more of a picture of not only how tax revenues are shifting within the city, but how they're shifting throughout the region. Because one of the reasons I think that Fiesta is challenged is that some of that tax revenue has been shifted not from west to east Mesa, but out of Mesa into Tempe Chandler.
North and south.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that would help us get a better visual of what's happening in the valley.
Good point.
These next several slides are building permits. So as we scroll through here, you will see one particular area there around Greenfield and Higley, right around the university area. That stays pretty constant. Believe it or not, that's a mobile home.
Manufactured home park,
yes. There's like one right in the middle there.
Higley and Maine?
Yeah. Right around Greenfield and Higley and Maine to University area.
Yeah. And that's probably new units being brought in. I've seen that.
Pulling permits, so.
Yeah, they're pulling a lot of permits. I think there were over 4,000 or something within the last couple of years. So speculation is that, not quite sure, but probably a lot of Arizona rooms or things like that as well.
Yeah. I just was out at a function at one of those places, and they had a whole they were doing a lot of replacing of the park models with new units and things, so it seemed pretty aggressive.
It's interesting how constant that is, though, from year to year on this map. So.
It is.
If we look at the slides beyond that, you'll get a better picture here from a 3D perspective. We only have 3 years showing here, 2007, 10, and 12, but in 2007... you know, most of your volume there is Riverview, the housing offices around Greenfield and Southern, and same thing out at Signal Butte and Elliott. And then you can see it drop off here by 2010. There's that mobile home area. Mountain Bridge is kicking up, and you still have the housing out at Signal Butte. In 2012, you've got some housing at Val Vista and Thomas starting to kick in.
next year we'll probably see out of Eastmark.
Eastmark, yeah.
This next slide is a representation of foreclosures over the last 6 years, 2007 to 12. You can see that Central Mesa there and Superstition area were hardest hit. When we see the next graphic, that will demonstrate that, as 2010 was the most significant year for us for foreclosures. The good news is that as of last year, we're down below the number we were in 2007. Property valuation is next. One thing to keep in mind as we scroll through these slides is the Maricopa County Assessor, there's a little bit of a lag in what reality shows, so it's about a two-year difference. So if you're looking at we'll scroll through these here, 2007, 2009, you're really looking at 2007 data when we see 2009, and that was when you see the peak of the property valuations. And this is a representation of both commercial, a combined commercial and residential property values. And then you can see it drop off, obviously. So this next slide is, we're going into where I like to call our state of services, but this is a representation of our age of infrastructure from a water mains perspective. So you can see that the central area, Central Mesa area, there has the darker colors. That's representative of older water mains across the city. And then you've got some of your newer water main infrastructure as you move out to the East Valley.
Now, does this reflect that extensive work that's been done just recently down off of Main Street and Stapley, and I know in Councilmember Glover's district, didn't we do quite a bit of water main and gas main?
Right. So you notice that in the longer areas, and I don't know if all these got recorded in time for this map, but the mains look like they're being addressed. What we're seeing now are the arterial, the residential streets that I see in here as not some. I mean, there's probably some mains in here, but a lot of it is the actual streets, the mains inside the, not the trunk mains, but the smaller mains up and down the streets. It just goes to the point, and I think it's been our focus. We had it in the last bond, water bond package. We had a significant amount of dollars set aside to do water replacement of water lines, the older lines. I think this is just showing us we still have work to do the quarter. We call them the quarter sections, where we go in and focus on a quarter section. And I think what we're and you can see the red dots are main failures, okay? Which you can see they're pretty much associated with the older lines. So, and then of course we have a few more on the east side, but I suspect those were old county islands that when we annexed they would develop much earlier than a new development that's out there. But it's just something we need to stay on top of, and I think we'll be talking about it more when we bring the utilities to the council, that we really need to still be pretty aggressive on the replacement of these water lines, because one, these failures cost us a lot more to go out and fix than it does to repair. But just the age of those lines now is we've passed the useful life. So this is just kind of a graphic representation to kind of show you what that looks like. And I think the next slide, we actually have a breakdown.
A little more summary view.
We do. The good news here is really there's only about 1% of those water mains are actually over 60 years old today.
And then we did the same thing for sewer.
Same thing with sewer mains.
Which is, that usually the water and sewer lines are put in together, so it's going to be pretty similar.
And it does represent the septic areas out there as well in gray. But this slide is about 3% of the sewer infrastructure is over 60 years old.
Excellent. Mr. Summers.
Perhaps Mr. Brady's best equipped to answer this question, but as I look at the sewer map, come on around Power Road where the word Superstition is, and you notice a lot of, you notice a lack of sewer. You notice a lack of sewer lines around where it says Central Mesa along Main Street.
You notice a lack of sewer lines at the junction of the 202 and the 60, but I know there's a lot of development in through there. I assume this was all area developed on septic, because I know there's housing in here. So what is our, what's our plan to set up some kind of financing to install those systems? Because those septic systems
are... Can I answer that for you?
I was hoping so, because I was T-balling it up for you.
No. We have been addressing that in the Sustainability and Transportation Committee. In fact, we just had an update this week on Monday at 7:30 a.m. So, Councilmember Summers, we'd be happy to give you that report that Catherine, Dr. Sorensen's department did. It was very informative, and we have a $95 million 50-year plan to replace those. And they did a great chart explaining all those areas. They ranked them between which ones we should do first and the cost. And she has all this really done well. And I think that the whole council would be probably really – that was a good report. And the supporting data that you gave us on Monday morning to go with was very good. So
wonderful.
We can do
we're
that.
All on top of that, aren't we?
Nice.
Yes.
And Councilwoman Higgins has been very much helping us get that information out. She's been guiding us, so that's been very helpful. Yes. But we'll bring that to a future full council study session.
Very good.
Thank you.
There you go.
So let's go to streets. You got streets?
Yeah, this is streets.
Very colorful.
So this is your pavement condition. It's put together by a transportation department. And they use something called a pavement condition index, but you see the rating there, red and poor, what they would classify as poor condition, and yellow is fair and green is good.
Black. Unrated?
Yeah, I guess they haven't got
Well,
that.
Black, the stuff in color coded there is the stuff that city transportation department maintains. So there are private roads and things like that that are not maintained by us.
But I don't know. I think that we just haven't gotten to all of them yet. So,
Do you know if we have any idea of the condition of the roads in the county? I know we don't maintain them and we don't do anything.
I don't. We'll have to ask.
Do we have something like this that would give us a general idea?
Let's ask them. I don't know. Lenny goes out there and.
Because it leads to the next slide.
Good morning, Councilmember Summers. We don't do any pavement condition indexes or anything in the county. We do communicate back and forth. Just to go back on the streets that are in gray are the ones that are private streets or we do not maintain. So that's some of those areas that's why they're in gray. But back on the county side of it, other than driving the streets, when we drive from one location to the next, we wouldn't be out there managing the county's condition.
Okay, so we don't have any idea what the condition of the county streets are.
Well, I my counterpart in the county, I can ask specific locations or specific streets.
Do they do something like this?
They don't do a survey specific like we do. We do an annual survey of our streets because the county is so big. Their traditional methods of maintenance of their streets is they put a new street in and not touch it for about 15 years, and they'll come back and overlay it in 15 years, and they do a little different process than we do, just because of their volumes, and again, they're so spread out.
Okay. And then how come the condition of my street is fair and the condition of the city manager's street is good?
Well,
I'm kidding.
Not yours is green.
It's not fair. He's
yours is good, mine's fair.
We keep ours up.
He keeps complaining about his street. No,
but we live one street apart.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Lenny. Okay, and the next one.
The next slide is actually our fire response times. So our fire tech services group helped put this map together. This shows the actual locations of our fire stations as well as the average response time to each of our city boundaries. As you can see, it's pretty good. There's just a few.
So our very edges and corners we're still working on. But I will tell you that, where is it? The station at, do we have the station at Main and 56th Street?
It's right below that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Incredible improvement.
And I don't even know if this has really captured all of that benefit, but obviously I think it, that'll even improve further to the east and north of there. We will, and just, council I think is aware, but we're, the Eastmark property will eventually have a fire station there also. So that'll help out a little bit with that far south east portion of the city also. But otherwise, I think the fire department's done a really nice job of distributing their resources and their responses, and it seems like we're getting there most of the time. I know there's still concerns about some, but overall, I think the distribution of fire stations, just looking at this map, seems to have made some progress anyway.
You know, the only observation I would have, I worry, you know, as we do these small annexations way out towards Meridian Road, you know, I think the folks have an expectation they're going to get, you know, these quick response times, and they're pretty far out there, which puts pressure on the fire department. They're looking to try and acquire sites, and how do we protect them someday? But automatic aid with Apache Junction seems to help. But I've just used it for myself to say, as we make these decisions about taking these small little areas far, far out east, how does that put the pressure on the systems?
No, it's a good point.
Okay, wonderful. Any other on this portion?
The next slides are code compliance.
I know. I believe.
As we scroll through here, overall, you'll notice that it's actually gets a little better in the Central Mesa area.
Mayor, Council, I think this is a little skewed because of the way we fund code compliance. I don't want to suggest that. I think I was hesitating putting this on because I think it. The concern I have is because we fund co-compliance officers that are CDBG funded, they're spending most of their time in the area that you see where the effort is being made, which is good. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure there's council members in other districts that say, wait a minute, I know I have some co-compliance issues. So I think this more reflects our funding mechanism. But we've recently kind of added more of the general funds source, and so I think you start seeing that in 2012, and you start seeing more of that happening where we have that activity happening. So it's obviously an area we need to work on, but I think part of what's happening too is just the fact the emphasis was happening in the CDBG eligible areas. That may be more of a factor here than really knowing what the problem is, I think.
Well, in the neighborhood stabilization program too, I can see where we've made focus, at least in my district.
Right.
Because that's where you
go in.
You go in and you're concentrating.
And that really
seems
to be effective as opposed to trying to be a thin blanket if you can just go in and concentrate and make a difference. So, anyway, good. And we threw up crimes just to show you. And I think this is a great compliment to our men and women in the police department. You can really see the reduction in crime stats. And these are part one. So these are the, you know, the high-end, high-level, worst of the crimes. But even if you go from, just jump from 2006 and go to 12, it's a huge change. And so they've done a really nice job of addressing crime throughout the city. You see it progressing. But I think if you just jump from 06 to 12, you really see that difference. So they've done both our public safety departments have done an incredible job in their areas. So. Right. And as you would expect, probably the areas that have the highest intensity are those commercial areas, the malls and things like that, which I know we're still working with our property owners out there. So anyway, this was really information, and we can we just like once a year kind of bring this to you, kind of set the stage as we go forward in the budget and discussions. And we can make these available maybe in a different format if you want to have them as a resource throughout the year. But it takes a lot of work, and we appreciate the work of the IT staff, the GIS folks. They use the technology out there that's very helpful, we think. So,
very nice. Thank you.
I just got to say thanks because I'm a data junkie. So these are so much fun, and they're so great. And it's really beneficial for us visual folks to see graphs like that. It's very helpful. So thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay,
the next item is 2C, a report of upcoming job order contracts.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning, Vice Mayor and Council. We just have one contract on this morning. It's a contract for 3 signalized pedestrian crossings on the Consolidated Canal multi-use path. One is on Broadway, just west of Lindsay. One is on Stapley, just south of Brown. And one is on Brown, just west of Stapley. So it's the only contract we have this morning.
It's had a lot of information and comments from folks that are using that now, feel much safer. There's a lot of people on there. I see, maybe I've mentioned this before, the winter visitors, 30 or 40 of them at a time in long strings of bikes using those paths. And so it's really neat to see that that's going on. I think a while back we had asked for maybe a report with regard to local participation on these job order contracts. Have we had a chance to get that yet?
Yes, we're working on that right now. I think Kelly's working with Ian on your staff to put that together and get it to you.
Great. Thank you very much. Any other questions for Ms. Hume? Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, hear reports on meetings and conferences attended. Anybody? No? Okay, scheduling of meetings and general information.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Mayor. Just a reminder, the Spring Out to Lunch Concert Series at the Mesa Arts Center has started, and so I invite everybody to come out for a free outdoor concert every Thursday from 12:30 to 1:30. This will last until April 11th. There are chairs available, but you're encouraged to bring cushioned seats and blankets if you want. You may want to dress a little warmer than usual today, too, maybe. And then our next study session and council meeting will be Monday, March 4th. We will have one study session item that we need to bring to the council regarding the request by NEDCO. So we'll just bring that to you at the beginning of that meeting.
Okay. Okay. Great. Thank you.
Well, it's a study. There is a study session with the NEDCO. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Short one. No. For Monday. So instead of starting it, we may start at 5 o'clock. I think it's what we're looking at. Is that right, Jill?
Mm-hmm.
5 o'clock.
Okay.
So
okay. Perfect. Items from citizens present. Ms. Mickelson.
No request, Vice Mayor.
Great. Thank you. A motion for adjournment. We are adjourned. Thank you.